Oh, snap.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Buddy, I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. We never let friends feed kibble if we can help it. And good morning, Dr. Judy Jasek. How are you today?
No, I'm doing great. I'm very happy to see the sunshine in Colorado after our few snowy days. It's nice to see it sunny and warming up again.
Believe it or not, up here in Evergreen, we had -1 degrees. -1. Yeah, it was too cold. That was too cold. You know, and the wind was blowing like crazy. So I can take the cold, but the wind, man, it just cuts right through you. And I know that's nothing compared to our friends who are out in Wyoming or the flatlands or, you know, the plains. I'm from Oklahoma. I know how the wind blows. So I'm not complaining too much. I try not to complain too much. How is the world of cancer prevention going? Because, folks, that is what Dr. Judy Jasek is best at. She is the cancer prevention vet, the cancer treatment vet. Cancer has risen significantly over the past, 5 years, 10 years? Have you seen that, Dr. Jasek? I've seen the studies. People don't seem to correlate cancer and kibble. But I think there's a direct correlation, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I have seen trends. You know, I've been practicing for going on 35 years now. And, you know, cancer, you'd see cancer, but it wasn't like something you saw on a daily basis, like multiple cases on a daily basis in your average practice now. They have many cancer cases coming in, lumps and bumps and different things. And certain types of cancer, like mast cell disease, is so common anymore. It used to be relatively rare. We didn't used to see it. So the trend is definitely going up, and it's quite disturbing. And I will say in the patients I see, it's about probably 80% of what I work with is cancer patients, and probably 99% of them are either feeding kibble at the time of diagnosis or have fed kibble for a significant portion of the pet's life and maybe made a recent switch. And even the quote unquote better kibbles, you know, these higher end kibbles that cost a lot of money. I mean, they, you know, for, you know, glorified breakfast cereal, you know, people are paying a lot of money for some of these high-end kibbles, and they're all bad, they're all inflammatory, and they can all contribute to the development of cancer in the body.
For some reason, there's a disconnect in our pet parents' minds that this stuff that's in this pretty bag is bad for your dogs. Where is this disconnect coming in?
Yeah, well, it's the information I think that's coming out in the biggest part of veterinary medicine still recommends kibble. They recommend prescription diets, which are so void of nutrition in addition to being inflammatory. And, you know, most veterinarians will tell their patients that kibble is okay. And so that's the story they're getting. And so I think, you know, we're like doing these podcasts, we're trying to get the word out, but I think we're still only reaching a relatively small percentage of all the people out there. And hopefully the word will spread, you know, as time goes on. And I think there's also, you know, I watched this video earlier this week about like censorship in the search engines. Like you go into Google and you search for something, and it's, you know, they will say that the information that comes up is based on searches and what the type of information people are looking for. But the truth is that what comes up is sometimes programmed by the big corporations that are, you know, in cahoots with Google and you know, some of these other search engines. You know, there's money in it. They're literally getting paid to put certain information out there. And so the information that comes, that you find on the internet, and these are like the choices, like you Google something and then there's like a, okay, these are your options. That's not always representative of the truth. And it's sometimes programmed. I think people have to be really careful about, you know, what information they're getting and where they're getting it from, because our information is getting more and more controlled. And I think that's a lot of the issue, and people end up confused. And if they're getting mixed information, well, why not default to the thing that's most convenient and least expensive? Let's just throw some kibble in the bowl and, you know, run off to work. That's the easiest way to go when they're not getting enough of the, you know, right information about how bad that is for their pets.
Yeah, that's really scary. So you're saying that Google now is being paid by obviously the big corporations, and they're messing with our searches. So if we're searching for something that's homeopathic, what's coming mm-hmm. up instead?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's something I'd like to like actually play with. Like you put in certain keywords and then you see what comes up. So say you put something like homeopathy in, you may get a definition about, you know, what it is, but then you may also get like five or six sites that come up saying that it's invalid, that it doesn't have any, you know, medical basis, that you need to be careful. You know, they're not going to come right up and tell you about the benefits. You know, Google raw feeding, and I bet there'll be a lot of things that come up about, oh, the bacteria in it and how it can be bad and all the bad things that, you know, that can happen, more than the benefits. So if you think people are getting fed a lot of one, not necessarily that it's not true, but they're not getting the complete perspective. They're getting a swayed response to, you know, sway them one way rather than another. And it's marketing, you know? I mean, we've talked about this before, this, you know, subconscious conditioning, and it goes on all the time. And so I think people end up kind of being swayed even without realizing it. And then, you know, that people talk to their friends and neighbors and what do you feed? Oh, you know, don't feed that raw stuff. You know, I read this thing online where, you know, dogs will die of listeria if they eat raw. So people hear this propaganda and they, you know, friends and neighbors are usually pretty smart people, you know, so people tend to rely on a lot of that advice and what's going on at the neighborhood potluck and all that stuff. And so people, they don't want to be the one that steps outside the box and does something different. They'd rather, you know, stay with everybody else and stay within the status quo.
Yeah, I think it takes a pretty strong person to go against, you know, the tide. People don't like to be that person that is different. We all want to be that, you know, in the group. We want to feel, and that comes from, which, you know, some of our survival techniques don't serve us anymore. Back in the day when you had to be in a group to get food, right, or to survive, maybe that was important. But today, come on, we need to be individuals. We need to think and not move along as a bunch of, you know, sheeple, as we always say, going over the cliff. How hard was it for you, Dr. Jasek, to be that vet that was outside of your peers, that vet who was doing something different?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting you ask that, because I'm actually started writing yesterday an article for my next newsletter about this, like, you know, why is it that some veterinarians are willing to practice different modalities and do different things and open their minds and others are not? Because I'm sure a lot of people ask that question. So are people like myself just kind of kooky? Or because that's what the profession would like people to believe, that, you know, the holistic medicine stuff is just kooky, it's not evidence-based, and all of that. But for me, it was, I'd say probably about 10 years into my career, I looked at what I was doing and how I was practicing, and I thought, I'm just a pawn for the pharmaceutical companies. You know, they come in, they tell you how to treat your pets, they tell you, or how to treat your patients and how much money you can make. And like, I'm being kind of programmed here to practice a certain way. And it doesn't even feel like I'm practicing an individual craft. You know, medicine should be an art form. You know, there should be a lot of individual variation. Practitioners should be able to develop their areas of interest and put their gifts out into the world. And that is all getting squashed by this programming. And so that really bothered me. And I don't know, maybe it doesn't bother. Most people are just happier, like we were just talking about, to stay within the status quo. For me, it was like, okay, I can't practice in a way that doesn't feel right. And then, I kept seeing patients get sicker and sicker. Like, what we're doing isn't working. That was the other thing. You know, that was the case, but, you know, I see pets thriving and they're all getting healthier. Well, that would be a different situation, but they weren't. They're getting sicker and sicker. We're seeing cancer rates go up and autoimmune disease is also going up off the charts. Over-vaccinating, some of these effects of over-vaccinating. Why is our whole health model based on pumping vaccines into animals instead of looking at what does it take to make them healthier, like with better diets and better nutrition? So I think I just started seeing a different side of things. And maybe for me, part of it is I years ago kind of quit plugging into, you know, the mainstream media. I'm like, I don't know that they're telling us the truth all the time, and started getting information from other sources. And I think when you stay plugged in to the mainstream media, it's like a form of brainwashing. And I think they really count on the fact that people do want to belong and they do want to feel like they're a part of, you know, a part of the whole and a part of, they don't want to be the ones to, you know, step outside the box. As we were saying, they want to feel like they're part of the whole, and the media and the marketing really plays on that. And I'll tell you, it is a lonely road when you step outside the box and even go against what, you know, conventional medicine says. So a lot of your colleagues think, oh, that's just kooky stuff. I mean, I'm hoping that at some point there's going to be a shift where practitioners and other people in the profession will start to take notice that, hey, what we're doing isn't working, and there's other options out there that are working more or better, and pets are actually getting healthier and they're beating the odds. And then maybe just based on that, they'll take notice. But I think, I actually think that we need to build new community based on a new way of looking at things, so that people that, like practitioners like myself, that want to practice a different way, or people that are looking for different types of care, have a place to go and have a place to get that information and, you know, that particular kind of care for their pets without feeling so isolated, that they have support in making those decisions.
Well, look, they don't have to be alone. They can come over and be a part of the raw squad, because that's what we are. We are the raw squad. All of our people that feed raw, you're part of the raw squad. We are a squad. You're not alone. Not alone. You know, and here's what I see too, Dr. Jasek, and I'm sure that you see it. So as Raw comes on, we have these type of products that supposedly are raw, but they're not really raw. Let's talk about HPP, people. HPP. Now, a lot of our listeners are not going to know what HPP is. It stands for high pressure pasteurization. What foods are those? Many of the commercial raw foods out there are HPP. Fresh Pet is one that you see in natural grocers. You see it in the grocery stores. You see it at Walmart. It's in the refrigerated section. HPP is a sterilization process, okay, where you put food in a plastic bag, you submerge it in a vat of water, and you apply 50,000 pounds of pressure. Now, they do this a lot with our food, and this is to get the bacteria out, right? This not only kills off bad bacteria, but it also kills off good bacteria. It kills off enzymes. And the enzymes in raw pet food is the very reason we feed raw pet food. And I was reading this article on Dogs Naturally, which you're doing articles for them now. But I understand that Suja, S-U-J-A, you guys are probably familiar with this juice company. They are facing a lawsuit over whether using HPP negates their claim that their Suja juice is actually raw. Because if HPP leaves the term raw up for debate in juice, then any raw dog food that is HPP'd, which no, Raw Dog Food and Company is not HPP, maybe it's not really raw. So we see that this, you know, kind of pseudo-raw is hitting the market. Now, enzymes. Tell our listeners, Dr. Jasek, why enzymes for pets is so important. What do enzymes do in their pet's body? Why do we care about that?
Enzymes are, I mean, it's a large class of substances. So you might think about things like, okay, digestive enzymes, which break things down. Enzymes are key components in many, many different processes in the body. And the enzymes and these components that are in raw food, fresh food, participate in many, many different... I was listening to a podcast. I don't know. They said, I can't remember how many, like billions of chemical reactions go on in our bodies every day. I mean, it's constantly going on. You've got billions and billions and billions of chemical reactions, and enzymes are parts of these. They're key components to a lot of these reactions. So if you don't have the appropriate enzymes, these reactions are not going to work properly. I think even more dangerous is when you do something like HPP or overprocess, even worse, you know, your kibbles that are processed at such high temperatures, you're changing the enzymes. So you're getting an abnormal enzyme, you know, these are protein molecules, and there's a change in them because they're denatured. Some of these, like amino acids, are broken down. So you're presenting the body with abnormal substances, and the body doesn't know what to do with these. And that's why you get so much inflammation from some of these overly processed products, because the immune system starts reacting against all these foreign substances. It doesn't know what to do with. It doesn't see them as something that it can plug in. Like, you know, you get a healthy enzyme, like, okay, plug this into this process. You get these foreign enzymes that have been altered by processing, and the body doesn't know what to do. So it keeps it reacting, trying to eliminate them, trying to figure out where they belong. And then the result is this chronic inflammation that leads to, you know, autoimmune disease, cancer, chronic itchy skin, chronic GI issues, all the stuff that we see over and over and over and over again. And it just doesn't go back to diet. I mean, most conventional veterinarians don't make this link back to the diet. How about, let's just start by putting these chronically inflamed pets on a fresh food not processed diet, and see if they respond. And then you start intervening with more, you know, if you need to add in more supplements or add in more support for the body, then you can do that. But you have to eliminate that source of inflammation, or you're just not going to have successful treatment.
No, and in this article, this is really scary. It says, if Americans keep pushing for a sanitized food system, we will end up with enzyme and probiotic deficient food and deficient raw food. Okay, we'll slowly see our immune systems deteriorate, leading to disease at younger and younger ages. Enzyme disorders will leave our vital organs struggling to function, and our overall health will diminish. So, and I see this being in the business that I'm in, where I'm actually selling the food and working with the people. You know, this is one of their biggest fears. Someone called me yesterday. She said, I'm just so, and she has an 8 and 9 year old, 8 and 9 year old dog. So for 8 and 9 years, these dogs have been eating kibble, okay, dry processed food. And she said, I'm so afraid of the raw diet. I'm so afraid that I'm going to do something wrong. And I said, you should be more afraid of the kibble. You should be more afraid of the kibble. But because it's dry, because they don't associate bacteria with kibble, because maybe they've not seen issues come up thus far, there's this fear. I'm going to hurt my pet if I take them off of this dry kibble that has the complete and balanced label on it, and I start feeding this raw. I'm afraid that I'm going to damage my dog. Now, I don't know how many times I've said this, but I get it. If you're just feeding a meat, a boneless diet, right? And maybe you're feeding chicken all the time. If you're just feeding organs, you know, our daughter who's a vet had someone come into her vet practice who was saying, yeah, I'm feeding raw. Really? Because your dog is on death's door here. What do we got going on? They were just feeding liver, straight liver. Okay, people, common sense. Okay, we gotta have some common sense. There are some dog foods out there, raw dog food companies. Their marketing is slick. Slick, slick, slick. And here's the thing. They have no organs in their blends. No organs at all. It is meat and bone, and that's it. And they really sell this, and they should be slapped upside the head. But people buy it, and then they wonder why their dog's in trouble. So, yes, you have to be educated. I'm not going to sell something that would harm an animal. But there are people out there that do it. I look at the kibble companies. They've been doing it forever. They could give a rat's butt that cancer's gone up, that diabetes gone up. They could care less about that, evidently, because they're out there selling it. So I don't know. I don't know how to help people snap out of it, to make that shift in their minds. And I guess we just keep putting this information out there. What do you see with your patients? What can you say to them that really helps that light bulb come on in their head?
Well, a lot of my patients have had the wake-up call. So I'm not talking to people that, you know, have pets that are, you know, have been healthy on kibble. You know, these are people that either their pet is already ill, you know, they have a cancer diagnosis, so they're very afraid that they're going to lose their pet. And they realize that something needs to be done different. They don't want to go the conventional route of chemotherapy, radiation, those type of things. They're looking for other alternatives. What can I do differently? Or I see people that have lost pets to cancer, and they're like, yeah, I need to do something different because I thought I was doing the right thing, and I've had one or more pets die. So what do I need to do differently? So that makes it a little bit easier. But I do still, you know, get some people that, you know, they want to feed like a little bit of kibble. A little bit of kibble is still bad. You know, it's, you know, I mean, I understand the economics and all that stuff, but, you know, I started telling people, you know, pay now or pay later, because even that half a cup of kibble a day is still inflammatory. It's like I'm gluten sensitive. So I eat gluten and I don't feel good. Well, I don't have to eat, you know, three pieces of bread to feel bad. A tiny little bit of gluten I got to eat in a salad dressing or something like that sets off that reaction in my body and I can feel it. And it's the same with the kibble. Now, kibble is just flat out toxic. The processing, as we were talking before about the enzymes, it changes the ingredients. It breaks them down. It makes them toxic to the body. And there's toxic elements in the kibble, like glyphosate and all sorts of other chemicals are present in the kibble. It's a very, very toxic food. And, you know, why people are so afraid of raw, it just mesmerizes me. Like, okay, you know, I mean, in human nutrition, they've been saying for a long time, you know, shop, buy your food, you know, in the, you know, the periphery of your grocery store where the fresh food is. Buy the fresh food. Don't buy the box stuff. That, you know, they've been telling people that for a long time, but in pets, somehow it's okay to just feed this kibble, feed this dead, toxic food. You know, why is raw so scary? I mean, you look at the ingredients, there's, you know, definitely less than probably 8 ingredients in most blends. You know exactly what they are. You're not reading a list of 20 chemicals or synthetic vitamins and minerals that you don't even know what they are, that most people couldn't even understand the ingredient label on their bag of dry food if they read it and know what all those ingredients are. And you look at a raw food blend, you got meat, you got bone, you got liver and heart and kidney, you know what all that stuff is. I think it's just that it's different. It's just such a big step outside the norm. And there's a lot of information out there about all the bad stuff that can happen, but they don't, you know, other veterinarians, more conventional veterinarians, that's what they will harp on is, oh, all the bad stuff. Well, they just blame raw. They don't even have the evidence that raw is bad. It just gets blamed for everything, where it's really the kibble is way more toxic and causes, you know, way more disease. So it's a mind shift. I think people just need to shift the way they're thinking and experience it. Like, I'll sometimes tell people, like, don't believe me, don't believe what I say, but try it. Just try it for a month. Just make this shift. Just commit to doing it for a month or 6 weeks and just see what you notice. And I think it would be extremely rare that taking a pet off a kibble and putting them on raw, you're not going to see some, you know, some benefit. Like, you're not going to kill your dog in a month of feeding raw. So just try it for a month. See what, you know, see what you see. See, you know, don't believe what I'm saying. Just see what you notice in your pet. So sometimes, you know, I'll take that approach. But then I'll talk to people too, and they'll get all on board with this. And then, you know, we'll check in as the months go on and they'll be like, yeah, well, you know, I got lazy. I was talking to somebody just yesterday. And I got, you know, got busy and started feeding, you know, the kibble again. And now their dog has a tumor growing. Well, you know, there you go. Like, I shouldn't have to convince you that, you know, that maybe wasn't the best move. Let's move away from, you know, from the kibble feeding. And, you know, it's the easiest, simplest, most important thing you could do is to feed a fresh, whole food, raw diet to your pet. You got to feed them anyway. So why not feed them something good? You know, then you don't have to add in all the other stuff and you're not going to be dealing with as much chronic disease on down the line.
And I think people get confused with what is a fresh whole diet with dehydrated products that are out there. So dehydrated ones that you add water to and they puff up, okay? And I see these coming on the market because, again, we're talking about convenience. You can ship them cheaper. But I want to ask you, I want to read you some ingredients. And you tell me if you think that this is good in dog food. Now, this is going to be a dehydrated food, but let me just read you what is in this. I'm just going to read like the first 10 ingredients because I don't want to sit here and read all, you know, 35 or 40 of them. Organic, okay. Organic rolled oats, organic barley, organic spelt, organic brown rice, organic sweet potatoes, carrots, potatoes, zucchinis, peas, green beans, beets, broccoli, parsley, dried yeast, dried kelp, ground flaxseed, and the list goes on and on. What do you think about those ingredients?
Well, the majority of them are, again, are inflammatory. So any of your grains and any of your legumes, so legumes are things like any type of bean. So this would be green beans, peas, those types of things in that class. Things like lentils. All of these are really, really hard to digest, and they're put in as fillers. They have protein, so they're put in these diets because these are higher protein grains, so they can get the protein content up without having to put the meat in, which is tougher. It's a more expensive product. I mean, what do you think is going to cost less per pound? Rolled oats or grass-fed beef? Of course, going to be the beef and the handling and the processing and the dehydrating and all that. It needs to be much more careful because it's a living food. There needs to be safe handling because it's alive. When you have something that's dead or all the life's been processed out of it, no, nothing's going to grow. You're not going to get bacteria growing on it. That's true, but you also aren't going to have any nutrition. So I see this because I read labels all the time on everything. I have a client come in, they're on a certain food or certain supplement, and I'm always rereading them because they change. They change a lot over time. That these companies will, sometimes start out with a better product. And they're like, well, this is getting expensive to produce. So, let's just add in a little barley or add in a little oat or, we add in some lentil and that's going to keep the protein content high. And all of those are inflammatory. So in my mind, a product like that, even though it's dehydrated, it's not a kibble. It's just as inflammatory. It's just as bad. And there's very, very few dehydrated products that I have found that don't have that level of fillers in them. And I don't, to be honest, I don't see dogs do very well on them because they don't have that like fresh meat protein in there. If I have somebody that's just, been feeding this product and they're kind of set on it and want to stay on it, at least start adding some meat into it. So they get some of that fresh meat protein. But yeah, anymore, a lot of those dehydrated or freeze-dried products are not any better than the kibble.
Well, and here's the thing. This is from, and I won't say the name. We here at Raw Dog Food and Company, we do not bash other companies. So I'm not going to say the name, but it is from a celebrity vet. Let's call it that, okay? A celebrity vet out there. I do see that the veterinarian community is starting to recommend this because I get customers that are coming over and saying, hey, I'm feeding this. And it is one of the brands that in their feeding instructions, they tell you to add your choice of quality protein. That's step two, to this blend. But as you said, okay, look, we've got all these other inflammatory things. It sounds really good. Who are we marketing to? We're marketing to the pet parents. All right, we're not marketing for pet health here. This is the step that really sort of bothers me, Dr. Jasek. Step three, add your choice of oil. Flax, borage, olive, hemp, sesame oil, fish oil, and watch your dog's coat shine. That just blows me away. So
yeah, that's leaving so many variables. There's so much room for error or feeding things that are so toxic. So, you know, your favorite protein. Well, you know, they're not talking about, you know, the importance of rotating or, you know, minimally, you know, processed proteins. You know, even if you're feeding, if you're going to cook meat, well, then lightly cook it. Don't char it, you know, so that we're at least giving them some of that new, you know, we're getting more nutritional benefit out of the meat by not cooking the heck out of it. And the oils, I mean, eating, you know, fat, yes, definitely has benefits. It has to be well-sourced. And fats that are toxic are so dangerous. They're so, so bad for the body. And these are your, like your polyunsaturated. So when I hear an open-ended statement like that on fats, and people could go out and buy corn oil or soybean or canola, or one of these that are very, very unstable oils, they sell them in clear bottles. I can guarantee you those oils are toxic. They're rancid. Fish oils too. Fish oil is not stable. A lot of the products out there are not stable. You don't know how long these products have been sitting on the shelf, how they're processed. That's why, you know, we recommend more going with a whole fish. You know, give the oil in the whole food form, feed them the fish. So yeah, open-ended statements like that are just so dangerous.
Well, and here's the other thing. So step two. Okay, so step one, you add hot water to all of those inflammatory, dehydrated items we were just talking about. Step two, add your choice of quality protein. You're going to love this one. First three, you're fine. Beef, poultry, fish, eggs. Then it says tofu, lentils. Add lentils. And then it says protein can be raw or cooked. And then we're going to add your oils. And I guarantee you that if you look at these steps, people are going to add those oils. And then they're going to say, oh, well, I could cook this. So now we're going to cook the oils and we're going to cook the protein and we're going to put lentils in there. Hey, let's give my dog some tofu. Okay. I mean, I don't know when I saw a wolf eating tofu, but all right.
Right. You know, and that's marketing too. That's marketing to them. And I respect all people's choices and lifestyle. But that is giving people that have vegetarian or vegan lifestyles themselves a way to feed their dogs less meat protein. That's what I see when I hear that. And so you're marketing to that population like, well, look, I can feed this and I don't have to feed my dog meat, or I can feed it just a little bit of meat. And I've heard this kind of movement in the holistic veterinary community about feeding plant-based diets. And it just sickens me because I know it's not healthy for pets. And to see the holistic veterinary community embracing that is really going down the wrong path. We're just going to really harm pets. So then people that are looking for alternatives, they want to get away from the average kibble and, you know, feed a fresh food diet, but then they're feeding a completely plant-based diet. And that's a very, very dangerous trend, I think.
Very. And then, you know, you see the same celebrity vet. So they literally, if you look at the product line, they're hitting every pet parent out there. Okay. Pet parents that really love this veggie thing. No offense, Tony. Tony, thank you for listening to us. Dr. JC Key listens to us out in Utah as he drives his UPS tractor. And we so appreciate Tony, and he's doing a good job feeding himself a species-appropriate diet, which is green smoothies, and feeding his carnivore a species-appropriate diet, which is meat. Although, right, but we get it. Yes, there are some benefit to feeding dogs a small amount of fruits and veggies. But listen to this ingredient list. This is on one of the other products that this particular celebrity vet has, that it is, again, all dehydrated sweet potatoes, carrots, potatoes, peas, green beans, beets. Oh, come on, people. Come on. And then we've got, you know, 25 different synthetic supplements that are going in there. Guess, Dr. Jasek, that what happens is that there comes a point in someone's life and you say, well, you know, as long as I'm not killing the dog, I might as well make a lot of money. And maybe that's what happens. I don't get it. If you are a veterinarian, aren't you in the do no harm? Okay. Aren't you in the pet health business? I thought we were in the pet health business if you were a veterinarian.
Yeah. Right. Right. And the whole do no harm thing, like, you know, to me that's violated over and over and over again. And it's, you know, well, you know, the food has that, you know, AFCO stamp on it, which really doesn't mean anything. You know, people that don't know, AFCO is a regulatory, they're not even a regulatory agency. They just create recommendations to be followed. Nobody is really watching that closely when it comes to the pet food industry. I think people feel like they see that AFCO stamp and then they think, and these are, I think, pet parents and veterinarians, well, they've got this AFCO stamp and, you know, surely somebody is watching and making sure that the ingredients in these foods are appropriate and there's nothing toxic and there's no chemicals. And that's not true. There isn't anybody really diligently regulating the pet food industry, except for the raw industry, which is the safest food to be feeding. And then that gets scrutinized, which is just, it's in the interest of these other companies making more money. It is all about follow the money. It's very easy to create a poor quality food, and then you spend your money on a really great marketing campaign, and you play to the emotions of the pet parents. And, you know, all the pretty, you know, like the kibbles and bits bag, you know, you got all these pretty colors and shapes and flavors and all this stuff. Doesn't the dog care about that? Not only is it unhealthy, like they don't care. They'd rather have a steak. It's all for the pet parents. It's all for the pet parents. That's who they're marketing to. The dogs. And I hear over and over and over again, you know, I'll recommend a pet transition to raw and follow up, like, how's your pet doing? And they're not eating well, you know, like before they transition them. They're like, yeah, they're just kind of like picking at their food and they're not crazy about it. You know, the other thing too about all these carbs of that last ingredient list you read, all of that stuff, high sugar, very high carb content. You got all your root vegetables, which all spike insulin. And there's, you know, it's the insulin level that creates a lot of the inflammation, or contributes the inflammation in the body, this inflammatory response, because our insulin levels are not supposed to stay up high all the time. And when you're feeding carbs all the time, those insulin levels stay up, and the high insulin levels in people now have been directly linked to cancer. to the formation of cancer. So when you're feeding these sugary carb ingredients, so these are your potato, actually all your root vegetables, pretty high carb load, you're increasing that insulin level. You are directly increasing your pet's chance of getting cancer.
Yeah. So, you know, bottom line is this, folks, just because there is a celebrity vet promoting a diet doesn't mean it's good.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.
And we've told you, I don't know if you think we just get on these podcasts and, you know, lie, blow smoke it, you know, just do it for no darn good reason other than we just like to mislead people. I don't get that. Or maybe you think that we don't know what we're talking about. But I mean, how many years do we have to have experience before we might know what we are talking about? One thing I see, Dr. Jasek, is I'll make a statement out there, or I'll, you know, cite an article, and people will say, do you have the research on this? Can I have the research information? You know what right. I'm saying? And people really want the scientific research. And a lot of times I think you just maybe need to experience it. Experience is invaluable. You know, it's like our Raw Squad, some of our new staff that comes on, our new girls, and that we can put them through courses. We can put them through, you know, raw feeding certification courses. But I've told them and I've said, listen, even when you take these courses on raw feeding or pet nutrition, that is not going to be a substitute for years of working with customers, years of hearing about what customers are doing and seeing the dog and trying something new. Experience is the key, and keeping your mind open that, okay, because this customer's pet had this issue does not necessarily mean, even though it looks similar, that is exactly the same. Right. So I'm always asking for feedback from our customers. And maybe sometimes they think I'm being, you know, demanding or whatever, but I try to explain to them, listen, we use this. Dr. JC, Neely Piazza, myself, give me the feedback. We're going to give you the protocol that we think is appropriate for this situation. And we want you to try this, but we need the feedback. A lot of times people won't give me that feedback. And I say to them, listen, we're learning. We're gathering this information. We want to know what has helped, what hasn't. If you go to your vet, if somebody calls me and says, I think I got a bad batch. I think my dog's got, you know, some sort of bacteria. I think I send them a questionnaire. And I said, listen, fill out this questionnaire, send it back to me. Go to your vet, get them to make that correlation. Can they make the correlation that it is coming from the raw diet? And show me how they're doing that so that we have that feedback. Very seldom do I get that information, unfortunately. So
Right. And there's always more to the issue. I mean, we've talked about this before. I see so many times when I start questioning, and you know, I see a client and you know they're not doing well or you know whatever's going on, I start digging and digging, or you know, a lot of the people that you refer in to me that, you know, they're started on the raw and their symptoms are persisting, and start digging in and they're on other supplements, or they've been on multiple courses of antibiotics or immunosuppressive drugs. There's always more to the picture. I mean, always. I have yet to see a case where a pet is not, you know, not thriving. We have, you know, symptoms, are on a raw food diet, and we've got, you know, some other stuff going on. There's always, always more to the picture. And, you know, I wanted to comment too on this whole research thing. There's a lot. I would almost go so far as to say that probably at least half of the research out there is probably bogus, because it's funded research, good research, good, you know, double blind, you know, controlled studies, very, very expensive to do. And who has the money to do that but these big corporations? And they literally will design research studies, and they'll hire somebody to do it. They'll hire a company or a university, you know, they'll go to the universities and say, look, we want this research done. They will state what they want the result to be. Like, okay, this is what we want to find out. We got this new drug and we want to prove that it's safe. So do that research study. We want to prove, you know, this food is okay. And they manipulate the diet. They manipulate the data. They will throw out. So say they have, they get data that does not fit with their parameters to prove what they want to prove. So you'll have, you know, a certain number of values that are within some certain limits, and then you have some that are outside of those limits that are going to throw off the whole study. They'll just throw those out. They'll just pull that data out. No, they're not. Those are outliers. So we'll just pull that data out of there. And this is done all the time. Research studies are often crafted to prove, they decide what they wanted to prove. It's not true research. So always look at, where is the information coming from? Who's funding